Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The National, then. The National, the big one. This is, in association with Reds Bet, this is the Anfield Wrap with you in order to go through what could be going on in the Grand National. We've got Tom Lee joining. He's got a long segment discussing the ins and outs of it with me. All fantastic stuff. But we are supported by Reds Bet for 2018, and this is us looking at the Grand National. If this other person only bets on one horse a year, who only gambles around the time of the National, please do join Reds Bet. It's tailor-made for Liverpool fans, and 50% of it is shared for other causes, fan causes and things that matter to supporters. All of that's available for you. You know that by now. But I just want to have a big chat about the National, really. West Tip, that's the first National horse I remember, Mike Nevin.
Yeah.
West Tip, I think about 86.
It was the same day that Liverpool beat Southampton in the FA Cup semi-final. So that was one I missed. My first one was 87, Maori Venture, which won in the most horrendous rain and wind. And my girlfriend at the time wore a very nice white trouser suit, and it was brown by the end of the day. It was just kicking up mud everywhere. It was mad. And then I've been to, as I said before, I think I went the first National with me missus in 95, been every year since, bar one. It's just the day of days. Obviously you've had the Thursday, you've had the carousing of the Friday, and then you've got basically the most famous race in the world on the Saturday.
It is the most famous race in the world, Paul. That's the event of it, the theatre of it. The fact that the whole day does just build to it. I mean, that's the thing. Now, they've moved the time to emphasise that even more, but it really does just... It dominates everything, but it also dominates, like, I know. You know that, for instance, you're going to speak to your mum and dad about it. Everyone's going to be talking about the National.
Yeah, it's incredible, really. Like, I've only actually been on the Saturday a few times, a handful of times, in me, like, because I'm usually there on the Friday, but it struck me the first time I'd been there that for the Saturday, how big an event it is. Like, you can feel it. It's like we've been obviously banging on about footy in the European Cup recently because we've got that feeling again as Liverpool fans.
What's one of them?
my eyes averted yours. I'm trying to be polite.
Just glazed over me there. Like a ghost I was.
But it's got that feel on the day, hasn't it? Like the build up to it, you can feel like it's that electricity in the air type thing, which I was surprised by, because I am your typical sort of day tripper. We're going back to what we were talking most about the Thursday and Friday. That I won't watch horse racing all year, and then I'll go to Cheltenham and Aintree and be a proper day tripper with my camera phone out and all that. Yeah. So it is funny when we talk about that on the last show that. And I suppose I didn't expect, because I've watched the National my whole life, and you've got the whole thing in your family of everyone picks the race, your horses, even as kids and everything. So to be sort of caught up in that live at the event, it was phenomenal. I'd highly recommend anyone goes who's never been.
Yeah, well, when you see it on the telly, it never fully does it justice. I've only been to the Saturday twice, and I don't know about you guys, but you know when you go to a new football ground that you've never been to before, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember seeing that bit on the telly, and the only memory you've got of it is what you've seen on the screen. And Aintree's not like that for me, because when you see it on TV, they film so many particular areas of it, and obviously there's close-ups of it, and there's some great aerial shots and stuff like that, but yeah, it's that vast of a ground that you'll always find somewhere that you've not seen before at any point you go. But the thing for me on a Saturday is the roar when they approach the tape. I mean, it does send shivers down your spine. Every single person is up shouting, go on, and all that. And I mean, just to have thousands of people in unity just sort of willing on 40 horses that you probably, most people there, apart from the genuine race goers, haven't got a clue what's going on. Yeah. And there's an anticipation then and a real sort of feeling of suspense, because usually one of them will break free first and you have to bring them all back round and stuff like that. And it's a really nervous wait. And I'm always happy when mine gets over the first, because I think if it falls the first, then it's just a complete waste of money and time.
The thing about the first fence is it's one of the smallest fences on the course, but
the fresh to it though, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's percentage
terms. It's a long
terms,
run into it as well.
It's a long run, sort of round the corner from the stands out towards the countryside, really.
Is it over Melling Road? Did you go over Melling?
Melling Road, on the way down to the first, I think. The thing, as I say, in percentage terms, a lot of horses fall at the first because they're overexcited. because they absolutely love it. Mm. They're bred to race at the end of the day, and they get overexcited and they get this high percentage of fallers at the first, despite the fact that it's probably one of the least demanding obstacles in the race. And then the third fence historically was one of the biggest. And everyone talks about Beaches Brook and the Chair, Canal 10, Valentine's Brook, but the third was notorious because it was a huge fence. The fences have been modified for safety reasons in recent years. They're still unique. There's no other course that's got this gorse and that dresses these hedges. You know, it's a unique look and feel. But
you ever felt that stuff, by the way? Because I play golf there quite often. You know, on the 9-hole golf course, it's in the middle.
Yeah.
The ninth green.
Yeah.
Where you come off, because it's only a 9-hole course. It's right next to the first fence.
Yeah.
And I remember playing with my dad years ago, and he went, "Do you want to come and look at the national fences?" So we went up to them, and I was like, they towered above me, do you know
sure,
what I mean? And
yeah.
They were just dressing them up. I think there was a meeting on there at some point, and the feel of the, what is it that they put on them?
It's gauze. Yeah.
It cut my hand when I picked one of them up. It's really, really sharp.
Yeah.
And again, it's testament to the size of these like beasts that get over them, and they just saunter when they jump over them as well, don't they? It's just, it's, and you think if you hit that.
It's fantastic. But Dave's referring to there just takes me back as well, because I think they still do this, but I'm not quite sure when it is, but you can walk the course.
You can.
It used to be the Friday night before the race. So the racing had finished on the Friday, and there'd be about an hour lapse. And then basically the public could come in and walk around the whole course. So you'd walk down to Beaches Brook and you'd stand next to it and you'd think, God almighty, it's vast.
I was almost jumping over that.
Yeah. And then it has a drop on the other side as well, because effectively it's a ditch. And that's like a sporting challenge, really, to land safely and obviously be able to continue in the race. So Beaches is notorious. The Chair, which is the other notorious fence, if you like, is the is right in front of the grandstands as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're out at Beaches. The only people who can see that are the ones that actually have stationed themselves in the countryside, maybe looking over the fence, as Dave said previously. But then your race goers in the stands, from the Tattersalls, which is the cheapest bit, through to like the stands where you're paying maybe £100 to get in. The Chair's like directly in front of you. So that's like that. I mean, that's one of the world's great sporting spectacles as they come. They only jumped that once in the race. All the other fences have jumped twice, I think, except the water jump. It's just fantastic, really.
Just to go through the history of it, Mike's first one was 87. He said Maori Venture won. I'm going to just know how good you are. I'm going to speak to Tom, and then I'm going to find out how good you are at tipping national winners.
No.
I want you to go through and just be honest with me if you had the winner or not. 88, Rhyme and Reason.
80, I was 1 year old then, so no.
That sounds 89, Little Paul Vare.
No
one had it. 90, Mr. Frisk.
Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Frisk.
That was it recorded the fastest time in racing history.
Yep, Mr. Frisk. Okay. 91, Seagram. Anyone have Seagram?
No.
I think I had Seagram. 92, Party Politics.
No.
Okay, 94, Mini Homer.
Yes.
I am Mini Homer, yeah. Okay. 95, Royal Athletes. The names, by the way, are so evocative. Royal Athlete, 95. Okay, 96, Rough Quest.
Yeah, that was the first national I remember, because Mick Fitzgerald wrote that one, didn't he?
Yep.
I didn't back it.
Number 97, Lord Galline.
No.
98, Earth Summit. Went off 7-1 favourites.
Yeah, that one, Earth Summit,
7-1 favourites, everyone lumped on there. 99, Bobby Joe.
No.
I have Bobby Joe.
This is my bad run coming on.
Oh, is it really? Yeah. This is my good run, 2000.
When the Irish started winning it with horses, it like...
Papillon, is that 2000, Neil, is it?
2000's Papillon, I have Papillon.
Number 6, Valverde is another one.
Yep, that's to come. 2001, Red Marauder, anyone have that?
No.
Oh, no. 2002, Bindery.
No.
I have Bindery. I tell you what, we might have to swap seats here. 2003, Maltese Pass.
No.
Edge Hunter's my next one, I think.
2004, Amberley House.
Yes.
People should have had that as well, because of
Ginger McCain.
Yeah, and Southport and all that sort of thing. There was a real bit of nostalgia about that one.
Someone said to me that whenever you're trying to work out, if you've got a horse and you're not sure whether or not to back up the national, just say it in Peter O'Sullivan's voice, and if it doesn't sound right, it's not going to win. 2005, Hedge Hunter.
Yes. Emphatically.
That was favourite as well.
Hedge Hunter.
Did that not come second at Cheltenham once as well? It was really good at Cheltenham.
I think it did. I had quite a lot of money on there, Hedge Hunter, and I'd been backing it all season. And I could have had a year off on the strength of that.
Well, I'm about to.
I could have done.
I'm not far away from, not quite as emphatic, but I'm not far away from one of them myself. 2006, number 6, Valverde.
No
takers. 2007, Silver Birch.
No.
My daughter backed that.
This is the stage where there was a few real outsiders.
Well, 33s. 2008, Comply or Die.
No.
Let me use the word emphatically. Right, on a personal
that,
level.
That was Tony McCoy's first win, wasn't it, I think?
No, that was Timmy Murphy.
McCoy was Don't Push It, 2010.
Oh, Don't Push It, yeah.
Comply or Die, I was more active in the horse racing back then, and I'd not dissimilar to you. I'd been a week in, week out supporter of Comply or Die for the National, and then when it went off favourite, and I was there, it might have been the last Saturday I did, or the second to last one, and I was at the winning line. I would describe myself as very pleased indeed. 2009, 100 to 1 Mon Mon.
No.
I had that.
Oh my God.
Honestly?
Yeah, I had Mon Mon, and it was the Yossi Benayoun scored the goal
at Fulham.
That made you think Liverpool were going to win the league. He scored a last minute winner. I had a 100 to 1 shot in the national. Imagine my Saturday night, Dave.
Wow. Neil, I'll tell you a story about that later when we're off air.
Oh, right. Okay. I like that. 2010 is the first Tony McCoy one. Don't push it.
Do you know that one, though? I went through a stage where I always backed McCoy because I thought he's that good of a jockey. Yeah. There's no way he ends a career without winning one. So I backed Clan Royal for years, and he come really close on Clan Royal a couple of times, I think. And there was once when I was across the Mellon Road on one of the embankments,
yeah.
And he did the tats, and I was watching him, and he fell coming to the canal turn.
Yeah.
He was about 15 lengths in front on the second trip round, and he fell on the canal turn. I remember going ballistic at him because he ended up walking in front of him like that. What the hell are you doing there, Tony? And all, I was like, he doesn't know. I don't know anything about horse racing. He thinks he's genuinely let me down there.
Terrible. Slaughter a national institution. 2011, Bala Briggs.
No.
No. 2012, Neptune Colonges.
This is where it gets tough around.
Yeah, no, it become the quality of horse that enters as well makes it more difficult. 2013, Aurora's Encore.
No. No.
66 to 1. 2014, Pinderay.
No.
Nope. 2015, Many Clouds.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes.
Me and my daughter.
Of all the ones we've gone through, that's the top rip.
Slightly
top
less emphatically.
2016, Rule the World.
No.
And anyone have one for Arthur last year?
Yes.
Yes. All right, then. I'm going to ask you all what you're picking in a minute, and everyone can just listen to this and decide to go for something else. but they can have a big listen to Tom Lee. Here he is now. With Tom Lee to talk about the Saturday of the Grand National Meet. Now, we're obviously going to come on to talk about the big one because it is the big one. It dominates the day. But first and foremost, we are going to talk about the Liverpool hurdle, the Aintree Stayers hurdle. Dominated about 5-10 years ago by Big Bucks winning every single time under Ruby Walsh. That's the year I remember it the most in, to be honest with you, Tom, and the power of that horse as it used to dominate right the way through the field. It is different to the National. It's very much, you see these horses at the most powerful, not just trying to survive through the contest.
Well, if it's anything like as good as the equivalent race at Cheltenham, then we're in for a treat. I think it is tricky because when you work through these, you try and work out, it looks as though, for example, one of the potential key names, Super Sunday, will already have run in the shorter race on the Thursday.
Right.
So actually, when you come through these, you've got the likes of Sam Spinner. He'd be a great story, actually, Neil, because he's trained up north by a guy called Jed O'Keefe, who's just really a very, very deeply sound guy, extremely well-liked. He's ridden by Joe Colliver, who, amongst other things, apart from being not such a well-known pilot, he also, not that long ago, was behind bars. So this is a real tale of redemption for him as he's come back with this great story. Is he going to win Sam Spinner? Maybe, because it's not the broadest race this year, but you have got last year's winner. And I think, as it finds down, it didn't quite happen for the horse I'm about to talk about now, Yanworth at Cheltenham. But this time last year, he did the business in this race at Aintree. So we know very well that this track trip and probably the ground will be okay. So very much a lot of this stuff in his favour. So Yanworth, trained actually, ironically, by a man who we already mentioned, Alan King, who's got Rhodesian earlier in the week. So it could be a brilliant couple of days for him. But Yanworth, I think, if we're realistic, very much the one to aim at there.
Then it's the big one itself. They've moved it. How do you feel about the move in time? Do you think that's sensible? Do you think it's the idea of shifting into prime time? Did you prefer it when it was closer to the 3:30, 4:00? What would be your ideal start time for the National?
Do you know what? I have absolutely no issue with it. And in fact, in a funny sort of way, I prefer it because looking from from somebody who's worked in and around horses as well, very often down the years, what we have got on either the first or second Saturday of April is a blistering hot day in the Northwest. And when you think of these horses, it's not that often in the season that you get races of this nature where you got literally over 4 miles to gallop.
Yeah.
So in terms of actually the horse's welfare, if you say, when's the day at its warmest? it's definitely probably going to be a little bit cooler at 5:15 than it is at 3 or 4 o'clock. So in that regard, I think it's clever because, of course, it keeps the crowd in the race course. It keeps them spending. It keeps the economy buoyant. And in terms of the TV audience, maybe it's a thing where, in fact, people have been out shopping or watching their kids play football at 3 o'clock, whatever it might be, or indeed going to a match somewhere, can indeed come back and get stuck into that as well. So, no, I'm not against that at all, Neil.
And having covered it as you do, I mean, the extent to which it must grab... Is everyone conscious of the number of stories that always are in the Grand National? Is that what you talk about when you're all sitting around? You have a meeting. How are we going to do this? What's the production plan for this? And you're almost like, well, how, you know, we've got 40 horses here and 23 of them have got cracking stories behind them.
Well, sometimes it's even more than that because you think, really, this is for some people who are involved in racing, even if you've got a, even if you own a hoof of a horse, to have an involvement in the National, actually get into that final 40, to do that in itself, to have one good enough, that's story worthy. But then to actually be thinking we've got some sort of legitimate chance of winning this race, well, that in itself is quite something.
Therefore then, when you are covering it, you're working out, you're trying to work out which ones to pay attention to. You'll have done that this year as well. But let's start with the best way to think about it, which is who's at the front of the betting and who is it that we think has got a fine chance this year. You were saying to me you think it's going to be a very open race.
I do think it's going to be a very open race because there's been a lot. I mean, at the start of the week, leading into it, soft ground on the National course. So I think everybody of a certain age remembers back to 2001 when a horse called Red Marauder won the Grand National at Aintree in literally knee-deep mud. I mean, the jockeys were coming back barely recognisable. So I'm not necessarily saying we're going to get one of those, but the potential game changer, if it is soft, of course, you've got to make absolutely certain that whatever you've backed isn't just going to sink into the mud. So going through them at the start of the week, looking ahead, you're talking about horses the calibre of Willie Mullins' Total Recall coming across from Ireland. He's so far probably not the most experienced horse, you could say, with absolute certainty, but a horse who's massive on potential. Recent winner over hurdles, unusually, at Leopardstown at the big meeting there back in February. Not so good last time out, but I think when you go through these, you can talk so many times about horses with bits and pieces of chances. Tiger Roll, the Cheltenham specialist. Black Lion, who is, if he was a human, he'd probably be the kind of fella who has a few pints and then fights outside the pub because he's just hard as nails, that horse. Same comment applies to The Last Samurai. Then you've got a horse who nearly won the Irish equivalent, Bell's Hill, if he turns up. Manella Rocco, who's run very well in the Cheltenham 4-miler before. So many of these. And in fact, I think there's little clues just starting to crop up all over the place because we talk about, say, for example, a horse like Annabelle Fly. It looks like, of the J.P. McManus, the famous green and gold silks, it looks as if Barry Geraghty will be choosing Annabelle Fly,
right,
who's got some very smart staying form in the book from Leopardstown at Christmas time. You work through those, there's a horse who's going to be something like 20-1 gold present. If he hadn't run at the Cheltenham Festival and run poorly on testing ground, I think I'd have been sitting here now saying, Neil, I think you and I should probably nip down the bookies now and back him. And yet that muddies the water because how hard a race did he have? Did he leave his chance behind with that big physical wasted effort at Cheltenham? And so you're going through this. Vicente, is he going to turn up or will he go to air the week after and so forth?
Just on that, when you mentioned there about gold presents, we, again, because so many of us, so many people listening to this probably, you know, may gamble once a year at Aintree, may gamble maybe in Cheltenham and Aintree, but in the same way in which, for instance, we were talking about footballers, we talk about the idea that, you know, that fitness in terms of what's happened previously out, about the intensity that the fixture list have had up to that point and all of that. There are a lot of these horses, aren't there, who are coming in off the back of something at Cheltenham, and they themselves, it's hard to tell, and obviously because they can't communicate, and trainers do know them, but it's hard to tell, isn't it, what Cheltenham will have taken out of a few of these?
Well, it's so difficult because, for example, it might be that Total Recall goes off favourite, and yet, how do you know 3 or 4 out at Cheltenham, he was in about 6th position in the Gold Cup and he hit the deck. How's that affected his confidence? You just don't know. And you're coming through these and you're actually trying to pick out the bones of various imponderables that probably deep down, not even their trainers know, they're hoping for the best. But until they actually get them out there on the track, it's really difficult to try and say. And we talk about these horses who ran in Cheltenham. Last Samurai, Kim Bailey's horse, that's a horse who stays forever, has been here before, and actually run with distinction over these giant fences. He's
runner-up, wasn't it, a few years ago, a couple of years ago?
Correct, literally 12 months ago. So I think when you look at that and you try and weigh it all up, you say to yourself, here's a horse who, you're right, it was 2016, he was second. He was down the field a year ago. But here's a horse who's been there and done that and got the T-shirt, smart staying performances, and yet he was gambled off the board to the Last Samurai when he ran in the cross-country race at the Cheltenham Festival. So he had a real exhausting experience there. And it's not a very big gap between races. That was the 14th of March, if memory serves me right. And here we are coming into, literally a month later, the 14th of April. So he's got a month recovery time, but it could take a season to get over a race like that. So that's very tricky. Manella Rocco is a horse who burst blood vessels. See You at Midnight has had a slightly unusual preparation. He ran at Newbury after a period off the track. We talked about Gold Present. And then you're getting into the realms of horses, maybe something like Old Gasline Boy, who actually I went to see in the build-up to this. And as you know, I do a lot of work with my colleagues at Fansbet. And the way we were looking at him, you think, well, where's a potential story? Here's a 12-year-old, so he's in the veteran phase. If he was a footballer, he'd be 34 and running games from a slightly withdrawn role like the quarterback. And yet, actually, as recently as December, anyone who's listening to this who goes to Aintree regularly to the other meetings will know that he won over the big fences in the Grand Sefton on December the 9th. He was fifth 12 months ago. And actually, for some uncanny reason, he's come forward and is probably best form he's ever shown in his lifetime now. So you think he's only had 29 races in his life. Not completely impossible, Neil, that he might be one who comes forward and perhaps could at least, I'm not necessarily saying as a 12-year-old, he's going to go and win the Grand National. But I think for those people who, if you're thinking, oh, that's the horse I got in the sweepstake in the office, that's not a bad thing at all. He could easily get into the frame and get you the each way money.
What trends would you ask people to look out for in this? I mean, the National, again, we talked about on our previous show about the idea that Aintree's a different meeting. And years gone by, I think the National was in many senses an easier race to sort of say, this is the sort of horse that does well. This is the sort of thing that happens. This is the way this works. Now, as the Grand National itself arguably has better and better and better horses entering year on year on year, it's a bit harder to see the trends. But are there, you said there, for instance, a 12-year-old might be a little bit too old. Should people have their eye on 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, rather than the idea of a 12-year-old or conversely an 8-year-old?
Sure. No, it's very much in a way of, if you're getting into those horses beyond a 10-year-old, then you're starting to stretch the parameters because you're actually looking at a situation whereby horses actually might be a little bit over the top. For example, the horse that won 12 months ago won for Arthur, an 8-year-old, i.e. a horse who's coming into it probably with a nice gap between races and still actually at the age of 7, 8 or 9, probably 8 or 9 realistically, maybe 10 for a Grand National, you're looking at horses who actually have still got the capacity to improve, albeit in their absolute peak and prime, i.e. sufficiently hardy, streetwise, experienced, able to handle the rough and tumble of one of these mega big field handicaps, and yet not a sort of washed up old soak who's got nothing left in the tank. So it is tricky, this, because I mean, you look at Black Lion. He came into the race 8-1 favourite 12 months ago. He was an 8-year-old. Here we are a few months further down the tracks. He's a 9-year-old. Is he absolutely in his prime? Was that his big chance? Gasline Boy, he was an 11-year-old last year. The third horse last year was also an 11-year-old. But generally speaking, if you look, certainly One for Arthur was an 8-year-old, the winner. The second horse was a 9-year-old. The fourth horse was an 8-year-old. So you're seeing a very clear pattern and trend there that immediately within that, as you break it down, you're thinking you want that nice blend of experience, but also the potential either to be at their prime or to still further improve. And if you want to drill that down even further, just go back to a couple of years ago, as you correctly noted, when the Last Samurai was second, a 9-year-old, the winner, ruled the world. 8-year-old second, an incredible 13-year-old was third. That's very rare. And then the fourth and fifth were 8 and 9. So you see there's a very clear pattern.
You're going to pick me three? What are your three to watch?
So I've got a real soft spot for this horse, Gasline Boy, who that completely goes against what's just been said in terms of 8 and 9 year olds. And yet he's won over the fences this season. He goes on any ground. His trainer's in red hot form. He was fifth in the race 12 months ago. And he's the type of animal who actually, when the going gets really tough, he will just turn around and go, What are you lot worrying about? Let's go. Come on, let's keep rolling. So I think if you were looking at something for a pound each way at 33-1, he's the kind of horse who can run a nice race. However, if you're also saying, well, hang on a second, I'm actually really wanting to try and collect here. Where's something that, if you think of the opportunity that you're going through these and you're all the while sort of trying to turn this round and think, who's actually going to give me a real serious rumble for my cash? There are horses here who've arguably had their chance. And then you're looking around thinking, well, do you know what? What about something who's actually still got time to improve, fits the trends, and is maybe trained by the kind of man who could bring one here and get the job done? There's an eight-year-old coming over from Ireland in the JP McManus Silks, a horse who's almost certainly, I think, on the grapevine, going to be the choice of Barry Geraghty, who would be able to look around the other McManus horses. And that's a horse called Annabelle Fly, who comes here off the back of not only a major handicap win at Leopardstown at Christmas, but we know he recovered from his fall at Leopardstown because the last day at Cheltenham, well, we all saw that on the 16th of March, he turned up and for all that he couldn't hold a candle to Native River and Might Bite, what he did do was stay on very nicely at a huge price into third in the Gold Cup. And that's Annabelle Fly. So I think when you work through all of those trends and bits and pieces, a horse who's versatile as regards the ground fits that trend we've been talking about, a horse at probably the right age category, who's still got a chance to improve, Neil, I think he'd be the one who, not necessarily at single figure prices, but what's he going to be? 10, 11, 12 to 1, something like that. I think you've a real good chance there. So rather than, I know there's other bits and pieces, but I think a lively outsider Gasline Boy, I think a more aggressive selection would be Annabelle Fly.
Excellent stuff, Tom. Let's get back and talk to everybody else. Thanks very much to Tom. Really kind of him to chat to us about that earlier in the week. I've got Dave Downey, Mike Nevin and Paul Cope back with me here. And so, you know, let's be serious about it insofar as we can. It's not meant to be that serious. The 2018 Grand National. And has anyone had the chance to have a look? What's got your attention, Dave?
The Last Samurai, I'm going to go for. I think it's around 16 to 1, something like that.
Yeah.
And I've backed it before, and I can't remember why. It's fresh in my memory, and it did win a race that I've backed it in. Also, I think it's gone well around Aintree before. The Last Samurai, Mike, do you remember it?
Yeah, placed in 3 of his 4 starts over the National Fences.
Yeah.
I can read things that are written down.
There you go. You could have passed that off as your own knowledge there. I admire your honesty there, Neil.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that's going to be my choice, yeah. But I'll go for that one. I'll put sort of the bulk of me betting money on that, and then I'll probably end up picking another 3 or 4 based on what I hear experts like Tom say, which isn't my pick, so I'll probably lump on those two that he's spoken about as well.
There is... Mike, you said to me completely independently before I told you what Tom went for. You've also gone like him as your outsider for Gasline Boy.
Yeah, I mean, and if you think about having a bet on it, get on soon because the amount of people backing it and talking about it, the price is going to go dead short. And another good bit of advice as well: if you're betting on the National, don't be betting in the last 15 minutes before the race because the bookies will contract all of the odds very, very sharply in the immediate period before the race. So you need to get your money on at the latest, really, Saturday morning. So that's one piece of advice. Yeah, I'm backing them. I've backed Gasline Boy already, as you said. Just as an alternative, I've not really looked at the race in loads and loads of detail, but because I know most of the horses and their history. But the one that sort of springs to mind is Vicente, which is 40-1. I think that's trained by Paul Nichols.
It is.
So there's, you know, in terms of like credibility on the train in front, that's huge. So I think that'll be a decent bet. That's 40-1 on Red's bet. So I back that one each way. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I've backed Gasline Boy each way, but I've just got a feeling about Gasline Boy. My son's a gas fitter as well, so I've tipped it to him. He's taking no notice of me. More fool him.
Paul, what stood out for you?
Well, if anyone was paying particular attention, then they'll have noticed that I didn't say yes very much at all to the list of Grand National winners. I think I might have had one in my entire life. So the best tip I can give is whatever I say next, just scribble them out in your paper. Yeah, this is like the kiss of death. I know nothing about horses, so I'm very much on a colours and names picking
system, and
I've decided this year as well because I've got a puppy who I've made famous by writing about it in an article this week, so I'm going to get her to pick me one because I reckon she'll be well more successful than I am. But there's a horse called Chase the Spud, And I've been consuming quite a lot of vodka lately, as you know, and my mates have all started joking that I'm going to turn into a potato. So that's as good as any. And then there's another one called I Just Know. And I've been banging on this week again. I should look away from Dave when I say this, but I've been banging on this week that I'm a prophet and I know we're going to win the European Cup. So considering I've been saying that so many times, and actually considering it's reasonable odds, it's looking like it's going to go off at 50s, the trainers won the race with Aurora's Encore in 2013
66-1. So Aurora's Encore was trained out of Scotland as well, which is quite a, I wouldn't say it's unique, but generally speaking, most of the successful trainers will have a sort of an Irish background or an English West Country background. So yeah, that's an interesting choice. But I like your Chase the Sport. I just know.
What are you doing, Neil?
I say that a lot.
Yeah,
I've got just know.
When I was talking to Tom the other day, it was the first time I'd sort of acquainted myself with the horses, and I had a look at a fair few afterwards. And I've got a little bit of a. I like the look. It's about 16-1 of Seeing at Midnight. I think it's just sort of reading about it, reading some of the background on it as well. Third in the Scottish Grand National on his final start a couple of years ago. Didn't run much last year, but I think that's to its benefit. I don't know. I think there's certain profiles. I think, you know, you look at the ages, and I had that chat with Tom, you know, certain things you can see, certain traits. You're looking at something that's 8, 9 or 10, a little bit more. You're looking at something that's not carrying over 11 stone, ideally. Certainly if it's going to get heavy, see it midnight's on 10, carrying 10, 11. Obviously a decent horse, tons and tons of background. I mean, the thing is, at the most you can hope for, and what I always want is I just want, you know, I certainly want them in the running second go round. And that's another reason why at times, if I begin to get it wrong, I maybe go for stuff that's got maybe a bit too much stamina and not quite enough speed. Because I just sort of think, well, you want the run. As someone who doesn't these days now gamble that often on horse racing unless I'm there. And that's why, you know, as I say, when I'm talking about the red bet stuff, if you are a once a year person, feel free to make this your once a year and come over for this. But I'm quite like, yeah, you know, I'll do bits and pieces on the Saturday. But what I want is, I want to see you in its second circuit.
Yeah.
And I want to see you. And if you can get
I mean, the phrase is a run for your money.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you can ask for is a run for your money. Yeah. And that's what I want. And I want, you know, if you can be there at the turn, three out, then yeah, that's great. And then because that's when you do feel that massive, you properly feel that massive entry buzz. I mean, I could have no horses in it, and it's such a staple in your life growing up, the National, that, you know, when you're just watching any horses coming to the running at the end of the National, you're like, this is great, it's flying. But if you've got one who's in the pack, the leading pack of 4 or 5, you're like, oh, hello, this is the business. And it's different to other horse races, and it shouldn't be from a gambling point of view, but it just is from a being alive point of view. Yeah. And that's why people love it. So I think Seeing at Midnight might give everyone a run. And that's why that's what the one that's in
cracking
my mind.
Name that as well, isn't
it? It is a cracking name to do the business. Listen, I hope you've enjoyed it. I don't hope it's been of use. Not really. Let's not pretend for a second. We're not going to delude you. We're not going to kid ourselves.
Come on, Gasline.
We're not going to kid ourselves. But, you know, thank you very much to Tom for coming in and seeing us. And thank you very much to Dave and to Mike and to Paul for all being present there or thereabouts. And thanks a lot to Redbet and our partners for this year. And as I've said all the way through, if you only have one bet a year and it's on the National, please do consider doing it with Redbet. They are supporting us, but they're also tailor-made for Liverpool fans. They're trying to work with supporters across the country through their other partnerships as well. It's very much about fan causes and fan initiatives, things that matter to supporters. The Liverpool arm, we're lucky to have one that's devoted just to us. It is Redbet, and it's 50% of profits are taken from there. It is meant to be a fun and innovative take on sports betting, and I think so far it's filling that remit. It would be great to start to get the causes, and we can start talking about them. That'll be on its way very, very soon indeed. But they are supporting us this year, so I hope you've enjoyed it, and do feel free to join up with them. And I hope you've enjoyed these little specials around sporting events. I'm going to try to convince someone to let us do one on the snooker. Maybe we'll just do one on our own. See you in a bit. Sports Social Podcast Network.